Our guest on this particular podcast is Christina Rasmussen, who is Executive Vice President of the Illinois Policy Institute, the IPI. You are based down in Springfield, whereas much of the rest of the operation is up in Chicago. But Springfield, I guess, is where a good deal of the action is.
That's right. As my friends like to joke, the crimes may be planned and financed in Chicago, but they're carried out in Springfield. Yes. So if you're going to do state policy, you've really got to be in both locations.
Let us talk about the state of Illinois, but not merely out of an interest in Illinois, that we're both in Illinois at the moment, but rather because Illinois certainly fits the notion of the states being laboratories for the whole country. And what happens in certain crucial states by way of effective economic and political management or failed political and economic management, what happens in those various states is of hortatory value, is of instructive value for the rest of the country. Looking at their states, two particular governors have said some interesting things. Here's what Chris Christie said not very long ago. Quote, I said we are going to balance an $11 billion budget deficit in a $29 billion budget. So by percentage, this is the largest budget deficit in America, larger than California, larger than New York, larger than Illinois. And we're going to balance that without raising taxes on the people of the state of New Jersey. One wonders how he's going to do that and what the similar problem, or rather what the similar solution might be for the state of Illinois. I'll ask that of you in just a moment, Christina, but here's a comment from a neighbor of ours, Scott Walker, governor, of course, of Wisconsin. Political leaders in Illinois kicked the can down the road, raised taxes, and ignored fiscal realities. Now they're realizing the consequences of their actions, credit downgrades, and negative outlooks. Is Scott Walker right? Can Chris Christie pull it off? Where are we?
Illinois is facing some momentous challenges right now. And I think the phrase that you used from Governor Walker was very instructive, a negative outlook. Even with all the advantages that Illinois has by way of a long history of a diverse economy, people don't necessarily have hope in the immediate future with regards to Illinois politics because they don't see things getting better. They see things getting worse. They see politicians that break promises, and that kind of unstable policy situation doesn't give people a lot of confidence that it's going to get better. And that, perhaps more than anything, is what's driving so many people away.
Driving them away? You mean you're talking here about actual population statistics, are you?
Absolutely. Illinois has lost people on a net basis to out-migration to all of our neighboring states, Indiana, Iowa, Kentucky, Missouri, Wisconsin. We are losing people to all of these states. So it's not their good weather. I don't think that Wisconsin has any better weather than we do, probably worse. People are leaving because they're finding that there's better opportunities elsewhere. And not only are we losing to our neighboring states, we're losing to states like Texas and Florida, places where there's no income tax or no death tax. We are losing people, and that probably more than anything is the best example of people voting with their feet and deciding that ultimately, even with the burden of having to move and uproot your family and your business, that it's still better elsewhere, and they're heading in those directions.
We have higher taxes, fewer jobs, tremendous state debt. The pension problem is something we're going to need to discuss shortly. In general, we're in a very, very bad situation. How did it come to be the case? This was once a flourishing state, as we remember. And indeed, this is important for the country to understand, if only to learn by our mistakes. What were our mistakes?
Yeah, we weren't always the punchline for late night comedians talking about what a basket case Illinois is. Remember, we are the state that built the tallest buildings, that reversed rivers, that grew economic prosperity and provided upward mobility for millions upon millions of people. But what we've seen in the last few decades is the utter failure of liberal policies that proclaim they want to help people, but in actuality are hurting people. 1 million Illinoisans woke up this morning and they were either unemployed or underemployed. And that is just a devastatingly tragic accounting of how poorly we are being served by public policies. when you have private businesses going elsewhere because they can no longer bear the tax burden, and not just bear the tax burden, but are absolutely disgusted with the level of services they get for the high taxes they do pay, that is an indictment of failed public policies. You want to go specific? It's pensions. It's how we work government health care here, rules and regulations. So often, the gut instinct of Springfield is just to ban and regulate and get in the way of people who want to aspire and achieve. And it's that kind of attitude that's, you know, biting us in the butt, because people are only willing to put up with it for so long before they say, look, I'm out of here. I don't have to put up with this anymore.
Well, how did it begin? And who began it? And what has happened since then? What's a brief overview of the decline of sensible or rational governmental management in the state of Illinois?
Well, the decline in Illinois can, to a certain extent, be tracked along with the rise of government employee unions, first being okayed as something that could exist, and then just rising and taking more and more power. Remember, when anyone wants to talk about real pension reform in Illinois, who's standing in the way saying, no, absolutely not, you may not touch this broken system, we want to keep our spoils for ours? Well, it's the government employee unions. And time after time, when you see working reforms that are working in other states come forward as ideas, the groups that largely are putting them down include a lot of the government employee unions. So reforms that are working for other states could be working here if not for politically and powerful motivated interests who, you know, serve their own good but don't necessarily serve that of the common good.
Well, give us some specifics, some instances. Go back to some of the earlier flaws of that sort, the earlier mistakes made, and how those mistakes have piled on and on.
Well, we can go back just a few years ago, 2010. There was a really good bill that was introduced in the Illinois General Assembly that would have given school choice to tens of thousands of kids in Chicago's worst performing public schools. I mean, these are schools that have been failing for years, if not decades. And the kids in those schools, you know, really needed a chance to get a decent education. And the public school system, even though we were dumping more money into them, you know, was failing them. And it was a just a very tragic human cost to that system. A bill came forward to say, let's give these kids opportunity scholarships. So if their parents decide that they would rather send them to a different school, a school of their choice, they could have that freedom and opportunity, have that chance to get forward. Unfortunately, you know, the Chicago Public Unions for the teachers came down and said, no way, because that would introduce competition into our system. And as soon as you introduce competition, we're worried that we're going to have to compete for the market share for those students, and we just really don't want to do that. So as a result, that bill ultimately went down in the Illinois State House, and as a result, those kids are still in those failing public schools. That was a great example of, you know, a small ray of hope into some very troubled neighborhoods, and it was squashed in large part because of government employee union opposition.
So on the basis of that, the Illinois message to the nation, as you would give it from the offices of the Illinois Policy Institute, the message to the nation is what?
You have to have a natural tension, a competing balance between government officials and the institutions that represent government workers. Because as we've seen in Illinois, we have this dynamic set up where who's electing the politicians? Well, it's the government employee unions. Well, who sets the government employee compensation? It's the government officials. So you end up with this circle where you've got government employee unions essentially electing their bosses, who then turn around and behave very, very, very favorably towards them in negotiations. And that's how you have this ratcheting upward cost and effect of a government that we simply can no longer afford, that's working very well for a very narrow slice of the state workforce. But for the rest of us who have to pay for these deals, it's not working so well.
And that has produced a great pension crisis. It's persisted now for a few years. Describe for the rest of the world out there beyond Illinois, where we are all feeling the burden of this pension crisis, describe how it developed and where it presently stands.
Well, let me tell you the story of Springfield, Illinois, where I live. Right now, we have more police that are retired than we actually have working and patrolling the streets. Every single dollar paid by property taxpayers in Springfield goes towards paying those municipal pensions. So we have this tension here where for every municipal pension dollar input by the actual municipal employee, taxpayers are kicking in four, and that number is rising. So in Springfield, you've got this situation where you have spiraling taxes, reduced services. And oh, by the way, the pension systems themselves are severely underfunded, even with that dynamic, which leads to an insecure future for government employees. And it's a system really that's serving no one well, but that's a system that has been set up, that's been protected, even in the face of utter failure for taxpayers, service recipients, and the government employees who will need to rely on those pension systems. And, you know, you multiply Springfield's problem across not only other municipalities, the school districts, the state, the city of Chicago, and we're facing a very scary scenario where services are being cut, taxes are going up, and those retirements that government workers are counting on appear increasingly shaky.
Something comparable or even worse has happened with the teachers' unions in Illinois. Is that correct?
Yeah, the teacher systems are very underfunded here, and it's not that taxpayers haven't put in a huge chunk of money. They have, in fact. 80 cents out of every dollar from the 2011 income tax hike went straight into pensions. Every new dollar that's been allocated for education in recent decades, 71 cents has gone into teacher pensions. It's money is being put into these systems. It's just you've got these inherently broken defined benefit systems where if they're not hitting 8% returns every year, and if people live longer, claiming benefits for longer, the system starts to fall apart pretty quickly. And that's why you see Illinois' credit rating is in the tank, because the rating agencies see those liabilities on the book, and they ask, they look around and say, who's going to pay for all of this? And they don't have a ready answer.
Well, one ready answer is to raise taxes. That was done on a totally temporary basis by Governor Quinn, I guess about 2 years ago. The state income tax was given a temporary increase, and he's just now essentially announced, well, I think we'll make it a permanent increase.
And you're touching on, I think, one of the other really big problems is a lack of trust in our political leaders. Now, granted, politicians across the country, there's trust issues. Looking at, you know, a review of the president or Congress will tell you that much. But in Illinois, we have this problem where time after time again, we're just getting lied to. And so people really don't have faith that the elected officials will even do what they promise. I mean, take Governor Quinn and this income tax increase. We were lied to about how big the increase was going to begin, going to be in the first place. He said 33, he signed 67%. We were lied to about how much money would be raised, what it would be used for, and the impact it would have. And of course, now we're being lied to, it turns out, about this being a temporary tax increase. You know, you can only kick a dog so many times before that, you know, dog isn't going to take it anymore. And Illinois taxpayers have been kicked, I think, one time too many, and they're tired of being lied to. And it erodes the value of the political conversation in Illinois about our policies and our futures, because there's no trust that even if you say you're going to do something, that you'll actually do it.
Of course, there's also a cover story of sorts that the tax change is essentially a soak the rich kind of tax change. It's called by the Speaker of the Illinois House, Mr. Madigan, a millionaire's tax, meaning if you earn $1 million a year, we're going to take much more of your money. But that's a screen covering the fact that ordinary citizens are now going to be required to go on paying, I guess, what must be one of the heaviest state income taxes in the country.
We were slated to go next year, for basically next year in 2015, every Illinois family would have seen real income tax relief. Our rate would have gone from 5% of income to 3.75% of income. What does that mean in real world terms? Families would have seen, and they still may see, 1 week's pay come back into their pockets. And 1 week's pay, that's a significant chunk of change families could have used for the mortgage, for making rent, for putting a little bit away of savings, maybe paying down some past due bills. And Illinois politicians are essentially saying, nope, that relief that we promised you, that we promised in order to get this tax hike passed to begin with, that's just going to disappear. But we're so cynical that we want to distract you from that and focus on this idea of a special millionaire's tax.
Yes.
And that you will be, you know, so easily distracted that you won't notice that we're hiking taxes on working and middle class families because we're going to sock it to the rich. Well, guess what? The rich tend to be very mobile, and people last week, after they heard about this millionaire's tax being introduced, I have no doubt they were on the phone with their financial advisor, their real estate, their travel agent. People will leave. People are already leaving. This will just accelerate the trend. And, oh, by the way, a lot of these millionaires that we keep hearing about, They're small businesses who pay income not on the corporate rate of rates, but on the individual rate of rates. This is a very cynical political move. It has almost nothing to do with good tax policy. It's about taking more for government, getting people to the polls, and that's why they're pursuing a constitutional amendment.
Now, how do you relate to the following? I'm going to read you just two paragraphs from a story where it was published in 2012, February, rather a while ago, but I think it all still holds. This reads, Illinois has not yet shaken its corrupt reputation. Springfield, by the way, is the source of is the location of the story. Illinois is currently ranked the third most corrupt state in the country, behind New York and California. According to a new report by the University of Illinois Institute of Government and Public Affairs and the University of Illinois at Chicago, the study also ranked Chicago as the most corrupt city in the country. The report was released shortly after Governor Pat Quinn announced his proposal for an ethics reform amendment to the Illinois Constitution. Quinn's proposal would allow Illinoisans to enact ethics reforms without going through the General Assembly. Well, that was just about 2 years ago. So has the Quinn reform changed the picture, and are we now becoming less corrupt? And how did we get as corrupt as we have become or did become by the year 2012?
Well, there's a great saying that the problem isn't there being too much money in politics. It's that there's too much government for sale. When you are
government for sale, you said.
Government for sale. When you are spending $30 billion plus each and every year, that's a lot of contracts, a lot of grants. One of Illinois' biggest corruption areas is these handing out of grants to politically motivated recipients who may not do a very good job actually delivering on what they put the grant request in. And it's all about taking care of political allies as opposed to where is the greatest need, who can best fill that need most efficiently.
Give us a recent example of that, would you? A concrete example.
The biggest example lately has been the neighborhood recovery grant program that Quinn initiated in Chicago, ostensibly in reaction to some of the crime areas, particularly having to do with shootings in Chicago. And it happened to be that all these grants were handed out or awarded right before an election season. And, you know, the auditor has started to do some digging into these grants, and a lot of them, they didn't do what they promised, or there were severe problems with how they were handled and reported upon. So it looked like it was more about political rewards as opposed to filling a real need and filling that need efficiently. And, the Illinois grant reporting system is antiquated. It varies by department. A lot of it is, you know, paper shoved into filing cabinets. We're starting to get more transparency with who gets the money, but there's still a lot of darkness and shadowy corners with, now what the heck did they do with that money?
What fosters this kind of corruption, which kind of corruption in turn fosters general economic inefficiency, excessive tax rates, ultimately people running away from the state? What fosters it all? Are there nameable conditions which tend to generate corruption, or is it a culture of corruption which is just part of the style of life in Chicago and in Springfield and has been the case since the time of Abraham Lincoln? Why are we so corrupt and therefore paying so large a corruption tax, so to speak?
There's a real disagreement about what is the function of government. I mean, where I come from, the function of government is to basically order a harmonious society that can operate where people engaging in free markets can achieve mutual prosperity. So government exists to keep peace, keep order, to honor contracts, you know, meet the basic needs. And then it should get out of the way because individuals meeting privately and engaging in trading tend to pursue their own best interests. This is a worldview that is very much in contrast with the idea of grabbing political power to essentially exert more power over everybody else. Should government exist to hand over power to politicians who will then micromanage the economy for us, who will tell us what we want, what we should pay, at what price, and how often? So it's really just a very different worldview about, should government be there to divide the spoils for us, or should government be there to protect us as we freely engage with each other to promote mutual prosperity?
Well, you say where you come from, that is the case. Where do you come from?
Well, when I say where do I come from, I mean the Illinois Policy Institute and this idea that individual actors, working with their self-interest at heart will come together and they trade on the basis of both parties, you know, being better off at the end of that exchange versus, government coming in and bookfooting it and making politically driven decisions about what people want and telling them what they can do, and using basically the levers of power in government to intrude on people's lives. I mean, and that's what you see right now in Illinois politics and policy. I mean, over the past month, I've seen legislators talking about banning the consumption and sale of raw milk, of lion meat, of ride-sharing programs like Uber and some of the other services out there. I mean, they come in and they talk about banning things that which may seem a little odd to you or me, but there are people in the world who, you know, want to use Uber ride-sharing services as an alternative to a heavily regulated taxi system that, you know, a lot of people aren't happy with the service and the price. So instead of letting this new market flourish and grow and meet people's needs, you see bills in Springfield just to squash this activity before it even gets much more than a toehold.
So if you've got interests that can be advanced or protected, economic interests, and you've got a lot of money, as unions do, as corporate organizations do, you can buy just about anything you want from the so-called lawmakers, or for that matter, the executive government people in the state of Illinois. Is that the case?
Well, I think buy might be a too strong of a word, but certainly you see organizations come to Springfield, be they corporate or, you know, otherwise, and a real concerted effort to use the legislative and regulatory process to secure themselves an unfair advantage in the playing field. So no longer we have a free market, but we have a market that the ground games, instead of being a fair playing field, tilt towards one industry or another. And, you know, that's when you start to see room for problems with corruption, because people will want to maintain these benefits or gain these benefits at, and they'll be there, you know, it's a great advantage if they do. And so that's where you start to see, you know, there's too much government for sale and you get into these problems, versus if government just maintained a fair playing field and got out of the way, we'd be better served.
Too much government for sale. I raised the question earlier. Has there been a culture of corruption which has prevailed for a long, long time in the state of Illinois and surely in the city of Chicago? Can it be understood in anthropological terms at all, in culture history terms at all? Or is all of the explanation in somehow an analysis of the economic situation in which we find ourselves?
No, I mean, certainly the Chicago Way is something that predates the Quinn administration, even the Blagojevich administration. You know, there's a reason we have so many governors in jails.
Because the Daley administration, the first Daley administration.
It goes back quite some time. But that's not to say that Illinoisans somehow deserve, you know, a more corrupt government than everyone else. I mean, we deserve an honest, open, fair government. But there does have to be a change in the expectations about what can we expect out of our politicians. Can we expect better? I mean, we've seen politicians of both parties let us down here in Illinois, but we really need to set our expectations higher that no, we can have a competent government, a government that operates efficiently and does what it's supposed to do well, and then gets out of the way so the rest of us can go about our daily business and thrive and succeed and grow, so that Illinois can be the next Texas, the next North Dakota, the next place where people are coming to because there's opportunity, and not just because of the resources in the state, but because we have a series and sets of conditions that draws people from all sorts of business sectors.
Well, I'm very glad you mentioned Texas. I was playing with the meme, I guess one calls it these days, that you can look at each state as a laboratory for the nation. If the lab lesson from Illinois is, here's how you shouldn't do it, is Texas a good example of how you should do it? Or is there some other state even more similar to Illinois in terms of its population, in terms of its industry, in terms of its cities, but handling things much better than we do? Who do you want to compare us to? Who's much better than we are? How do they do things differently? How did they get that way?
Well, I mean, Indiana is our next door neighbor. I mean, if
exactly.
You look at Texas, people always say, oh, well, it's, you know, the energy industry, and that certainly can explain why companies like Amazon are flocking to Texas to build facilities and so forth. And it's interesting, the other thing people will poo-poo about the Texas comparison is that, oh, well, their jobs pay so much less than ours. Well, it's fascinating that this 2012 was the year that Texas actually overtook Illinois in median household income, and their purchasing power parity is a lot higher, of course. But, you know, Indiana's right next door.
Yeah, what do we learn from them?
a series of governors who's tackled thorny issues like property tax reform, government unionism, pensions, you know, a well-functioning government. I love hearing the story from Mitch Daniels talking about how they went into the Department of Motor Vehicles in Indiana, and they focused intently on getting down the time it takes the average person to get a driver's license. They'd actually clock it 10 minutes to 8 minutes to 6 minutes because it was about serving people well in the roles that government do play and then letting them get back to their life. And so it was a totally different approach to how government works. For anyone who's tried to renew a driver's license recently in Illinois, you know, it takes a lot more on average than 6 minutes to get in and get done. And it's just a different approach to how government should work, the expectations we can have, and the understanding that, yes, you can tackle these big thorny issues, come up with resolutions that treats everyone fairly, and move forward and focus on creating better conditions for people to thrive.
Was Indiana always a more honest place, a less corrupt place, or is it recent governors who turned the state around?
Where they would compare historically for any corruption rankings. I mean, every state to a certain degree is going to have problems with, you know, bad actors, people doing bad things. I mean, you see that certainly with the congressional delegations of states across the country. But I think you did see a turnaround with Governor Daniels saying, hey, we're going to make sure that the government employee unions don't have this unfair imbalance when it comes to the relationship with taxpayers, that we're going to expect more out of government, that we're going to tackle the big issues. And, you know, you have businesses just moving over the state line into Indiana because, okay, you know, the tax burden may still be, you know, more than they would like, but they've at least got faith that Illinois is going in the right
direction. Is something comparable happening in Wisconsin since Scott Walker fought his good fight against the unions there?
Yeah, I mean, without a doubt, Wisconsin has...
Are businesses moving into Wisconsin?
Yeah. I mean, you look at the case of there was a business in Rockford that dealt with online commerce, and it just moved, you know, a couple miles north into Wisconsin to set up there because they didn't have this onerous regulation regarding online taxation issues. Don't get me wrong. Wisconsin has a high tax burden, but everyone just heard about the tax cut that Governor Walker signed into law. So, again, it's about where are you headed? Number one, are you stable? But are you stable and moving in the right direction and stable or moving in the wrong direction? Illinois isn't even stable at this point. I mean, we're all over the place. We're all over the place and people feel like it's getting worse. And that's probably the most dangerous of combinations to have.
One recent change in Illinois is the foundation of the Illinois Policy Institute. And you and John Tillman and the many other fine colleagues you've got have been getting a lot of proper attention in the state from the press. Clearly you're having some effect, some influence, I hope, or are you not? You know better than I do whether you're reaching people who can make a difference.
It's amazing. The Illinois Policy Institute, amazing group of people who get up every single morning and go to fight for fairness and freedom for the people.
You were founded only, what, 3 or 4 years ago, isn't it?
Actually, we were founded right after 9/11. John Tillman, our CEO, came on board in 2007, and really the skyrocketing growth and impact of our group has really been marked with his arrival and growth of this organization. And, I mean, whether it's fighting tax increases, promoting government transparency, you know, doing a true accounting of what Obamacare is meaning for our, you know, our state budget, as well as the healthcare choices of Illinoisans across the country, school choice, having an understanding of this pension crisis. And, you know, we've talked a lot about the negatives so far this conversation, the problems that Illinois has, but the more important part is that we've got solutions. We've got ideas for how to move forward. We're talking about Chicago pensions, and in a few weeks we'll be releasing a solution to Chicago's pensions so that you not only stop the bleeding, you begin to get out of this hole. So we're moving in the right direction, and people can have faith that once again, things are going to get better in Illinois because we implemented the real policy solutions that get us to where we need to be.
It's time to ask whether IPI views itself as essentially a conservative organization, or views its policies as representing the best in essential fiscal and governmental conservatism, or is that sort of categorization not relevant to the matters we've been discussing?
You know, I've heard a lot of words used with us, conservative, libertarian, free market. Basically, our fundamental belief is that individuals tend to know what's best for them. They, more than any bureaucrats in state government, more than any politician sitting in Springfield, know what's best for their family. And if you get government out of the way and stop distorting the choices that we have before us, that they'll usually do what's best for them. And when you have a bunch of people doing what's best for them, you know, you have people coming together to grow businesses and to trade and to figure out what schools work best for their families and to have, you know, trust in their government because they can see what it's up to. That, you know, that is our approach to what basically public policy in Illinois can look like. Because I can tell you, I mean, I'm looking at the state capitol right now. These folks don't necessarily know anything more than you and I do about our lives, but they're removed from the immediacy of the impact. We know the impact that political choices have on our lives, and we see how often they hurt people. Get rid of that, and you're in a much better position.
Political choices. So then you're saying that essentially rectification begins with electing other people.
Well, we don't do politics. The IRS actually has pretty strict rules about
sure.
Mine. Yeah. We work with Democrats and Republicans, and we have a set of ideas that we know work because we've seen it work in other states and we've seen it work here. That I'm thrilled when a Republican or a Democrat basically picks up these ideas and, you know, integrates it into their platform, and they're winning ideas. And of course, Illinois is an election year right now. Based on who came out of the primary, it looks like we're going to have a pretty a stark choice, and ultimately that's up to Illinois voters. But we know that right now the policies that are in place on the books are failing us.
And you think that the Republican candidate for governor represents a significant likely change, whereas the Democratic incumbent who wants to stay as governor would just give us more of the same?
Well, we see the campaign themes shaping up right now. Governor Quinn is likely to continue the themes that the drums that he'd been beating regarding a minimum wage increase, higher taxes, more spending, and the GOP candidate offers something different. And that's a choice ultimately that voters will have to make. Regardless of who wins, the Illinois Policy Institute will still be here promoting the good ideas, the reforms that we need, running the numbers on how these solutions will impact our state budget and the economy, and, you know, showing how people's lives can be improved with better public policy.
I think you've now got in this country, in virtually every state, maybe in everyone for all I know, something like the Illinois Policy Institute, maybe not as effective, but focused on policy issues relevant to the state and trying to produce more rationality and more honesty and thus more efficiency in the total political economic system. Does this represent sort of a significant change in the approach to these problems in the nation, or is Illinois in some sense still isolated in the presence of and the effective achievement of the policy of your Illinois Policy Institute?
There are many amazing groups across the country, you're right, think tanks in almost every state, if not every state.
And it's a new development, isn't it, comparatively?
I would say over the past decade, maybe two decades,
yeah.
I mean, first with our federalist system, state government has a lot of power over our daily lives.
Mm-hmm.
And they can wield an awesome amount of power. So, the federal government really matters, but so do state capitals. And so you see this network of independent think tanks who share a united belief in the power of the individual, the power of the freedom to trade and free markets, influencing public policy in all 50 states. And I think it's a wonderful thing. Taxpayer watchdogs in every state capital, that's a wonderful development. And I know that a lot of these groups, as with the Illinois Policy Institute, have had great success in pushing back against some of the overbearing tendencies of government and focusing on making what government we do have better. And it's really been a good trend to see, and I think you'll see more of it in years to come.
Well, as an Illinois citizen, somewhat benighted with the realization that as taxes go up and the services go down in quality and in availability, I commend you most sincerely, and I thank you for your efforts. And I thank you very much for joining us today. It's been a very valuable discussion. And I think it does provide a lesson for the nation.
I hope so. And I hope the real lesson is that Illinois can be a comeback story, that even with all these problems, you can fix it. And if you can fix Illinois, there's hope for everyone.
Indeed, there is. Thank you, Christina, so much for joining us today.
Thank you.